From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. The country's Homeland Security Chief, Michael Chertoff, says his department must focus first on catastrophes that could end thousands of lives rather than on preventing a bomb in a subway that may kill 30 people. Clark Kent Irvin might beg to differ. He's a former Inspector General for the Federal Department of Homeland Security. Irvin believes the United States must consider all the ways it's vulnerable to terror.
I think that we are seeing a resurgence of terrorism, certainly in Western Europe and indeed worldwide, given the recent attacks in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt. I think this is a reminder to the whole world, it's a reminder to us, the American people, that we remain under threat of terrorist attack.
While you were with the Department of Homeland Security, you were very upfront with what the department was doing right and what they were doing wrong. I'm curious if you could, not the department so much as the country itself, people in general, what aren't we learning?
Well, I do think, actually, that through congressional attention, through institutions like the Office of Inspector General, the Government Accountability Office, through the attention that the media gives to this issue, I do think that here and there, the American people understand that there are vulnerabilities in aviation still. There are vulnerabilities in terms of port security and certainly mass transit security we've come to further appreciate in the last few weeks. But I don't think that the average American understands in any kind of comprehensive way just how many vulnerabilities there are, how easy it is to exploit those vulnerabilities, and how determined the terrorists are to strike us again. And the tendency, I think, of the American people is to be very much focused on the moment. That generally has been a good thing, a good element in our culture. But I'm afraid that the downside of that is that we tend to think that if a certain period of time, which for us is a short period of time, is passed without any attack, that means that there's not going to be an attack in the future. The last time we were attacked was almost 4 years ago, September 2001, for an American. That's an eternity. We can't come to the conclusion that because there hasn't been an attack in 4 years and because there's now a department called the Department of Homeland Security, we're safe. The fact that we haven't been attacked in 4 years, I think, is likelier to mean that al-Qaeda just has a very, very long timeline, and they're determined to make the next attack even more spectacular than the last one.
We should note that you no longer hold your post as Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security. In fact, the administration did not renew your post there. Many suggest that it was because you were too vocal in findings that you suggested were not in the best interest of this country and the best interest of the Department of Homeland Security by virtue of trying to shore up our shores. You pointed out many holes in security. If, in fact, that is true, what does that say to the American public in terms of the attempt at being safe and the realization that in order to do so, you have to look at this with a microscope?
Right. It's true that the administration did not renominate me when my appointment expired at the end of last year, December of 2004. But actually, the real fault, frankly, lay with the Senate, with two senators in particular, the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate Governmental Affairs, now called Senate Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee. Neither Chairman Collins nor Senator Lieberman would ever permit the committee to vote on my nomination. So to his great credit, the president, at the end of 2003, my first year in office, gave me a recess appointment. And when the White House resubmitted my nomination at the beginning of 2004, again, Chairman Collins and Senator Lieberman refused to permit a vote out the second year as well. And that said,
Why do you believe they did that? Do you believe it was because you were exposing flaws in the system?
You know, interestingly enough, I don't believe it had anything to do with that. If anything, I understand from their staffs that both Senator Collins and Senator Lieberman appreciated the work that I did as Inspector General. Ostensibly, the reason was that I was not aggressive enough in investigating a single alleged instance of wrongdoing when I was the Inspector General at the State Department. I explained to the staff of the senators that I did not investigate that matter because I didn't have jurisdiction to do so. And I just kind of note the irony there. I was criticized by many for being too aggressive in investigating wrongdoing at the Department of Homeland Security, and These two senators ostensibly, and I think that's the key word, held me up at Homeland Security because they thought that I was not aggressive enough in a single instance at the State Department.
What are some of the issues that you brought forth, even as early as 2002 when you talked about federal marshals being hired at the last minute, some of them falling asleep on the job, some testing positive for alcohol and drugs while on duty. In 2003, you talked about the ability to sneak explosives and weapons past security screeners in 15 airports and the like. And the list goes on, including misappropriation and squandering of monies spent on, for instance, lavish parties for outfits like Boeing, contractors for the government. As you take a look at this situation, do you see it better today than you did 2-3 years ago? If not, what has to be done to correct some of these situations?
Well, I'll start with the positive. I do think, and I've said this before, that Secretary Chertoff is generally off to a good start. In particular, I applaud him for this, what he calls risk-based, consequences-based approach to Homeland Security. We just can't protect ourselves against every conceivable threat. So rightly, he says that we need to focus on those threats that are likeliest to materialize and those that, if they were to materialize, would have the greatest impact in terms of death and injury and economic damage. So I think that's exactly right. That said, many, if not all, really, of the problems that I called attention to a year or so ago remain. In 2003, we did undercover investigations at airports around the country to see how easy it was to sneak deadly weapons past the screeners. We found that the exact results were and remain classified. It was far easier to do that than it should have been. As you probably know, just a few months ago, my former office did the very same test at the same airports and basically found that there had been no improvement. So things haven't changed in that regard. In terms of air marshals, there continue to be problems. For example, air marshals have to identify themselves to get discounts at certain hotels when they travel, and they must stay at only certain hotels. And so obviously that's a vulnerability because it makes it easy for terrorists to know who they are, and that compromises their anonymity. So it's going to take a long time, I think, to turn the department around to make it the effective counterterrorism tool that it was intended to be.
6 months ago, you suggested that our public transit systems were extremely vulnerable, and then, of course, we saw the incidents in London. When we take a look at the situation here in the United States, it does not seem that we are being proactive enough with some of the issues that many people, quite frankly, have pointed out as vulnerable points for terrorists.
Well, I think that's right, Ed. I think, generally speaking, we, our leaders, have not approached the issue of Homeland Security with the seriousness, sobriety, and urgency that I think we need. Now, I want to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we can protect ourselves 100% against terrorism. We can't absolutely prevent it. But what's inexcusable is our not doing everything possible to protect ourselves. And so, for example, just to go back to that undercover investigation airports, we made a number of recommendations in that report, among which was the wide deployment of technology like backscatter technology, which essentially is an X-ray that would permit screeners to see through people's clothing so that if there are weapons hidden on the body underneath the clothing, those weapons would be clearly revealed. Now, obviously, there are privacy implications to that, but those can be mitigated. There's technology that can transmit the body into a cartoon stick figure so that no one's sensitive parts are shown, but any metal objects, any guns or knives can readily be detected. Now, that would reduce to virtually zero, if not zero, the ability of passengers to conceal deadly weapons on themselves. That technology exists. It costs money, obviously, to deploy it, but it seems to me that we cannot afford to scrimp when it comes to the national security of the United States.
There is a huge question now floating about racial profiling and whether or not, based on the events over the course of the last few years, that should be something that we allow for if appropriate information is handed down. How do you see that?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, Ed, and I must say that I have really wrestled with that in the last few weeks. Being an African American, being a member of a racial minority group, I'm especially sensitive course to racial profiling issues. And indeed, you know, the recent attacks in London, the July 21 attacks in London, were perpetrated by East Africans. One of the bombers on July 7 in London was of Jamaican descent. So, you know, I myself and you yourself would be under suspicion if racial profiling were undertaken here in this country with regard to potential terrorists. So that troubles me. On the other hand, it seems to me that the fact of the matter is that at least in the last few years, these terrorist attacks have been perpetrated by an identifiable racial and ethnic group. And so, in a sense, we would be undercutting ourselves if we weren't to give extra scrutiny to people who fit that stereotype. If the largest number, the lion's share of identified terrorists in the last few years were blonde-haired, blue-eyed, Anglo-looking males, then it would make sense, it seems to me, to pay particular attention to them. But that's just not been the case. So it's a very difficult question, but I'm afraid that I think we have to consider it given the circumstances and given the stakes.
Do you think in the near future we are going to see another attack on our soil here?
I'm afraid to say that I think it's just a question of time for a number of reasons. First of all, the terrorists have made it clear that they intend to attack again. Bin Laden himself, his deputy, al-Zarqawi in Iraq, others have made it clear that they intend to do that. And given all the vulnerabilities that we have in an open country like America, given the lack of urgency that we've had in the last few years, it's very easy to perpetrate an attack. And so, as I say, I think the reason why we haven't seen one sooner is because they want the next attack to be even more spectacular than the last one.
Clark Kent Irvin, former Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, we thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, it's my pleasure, Ed. Thank you for having me.
Clark Kent Irvin is the former Inspector General for the Federal Department of Homeland Security. He's currently Director of the Homeland Security Initiative at the Aspen Institute.